Well, my guest tonight at the big table is the editor of the new book, Rust Belt Chicago, an anthology. In it, great Chicago writers explore their love of the city, the built city, the divided city, the city of movement, the living city, the city of migrants, the conflicted city. Chicago's always had great writers speak for it, those who choose to tell the real stories of a gritty Rust Belt capital. And it's not just a city of big shoulders, it's a city of contrast and creativity. Martha Bain knows this well. As the editor of the anthology, she starts by saying, Chicago is built on the foundation of meat and railroads and steel, on opportunity and exploitation. Bain is a senior editor for Belt Magazine, which covers the Midwest, the Rust Belt. Bain is no stranger to Chicago readers. She's a longtime freelance journalist and one-time editor of the Chicago Reader and the creator of Soup and Bread at the Hideout, which I just wanted to throw in there for no other reason. That's an awesome event. Martha Bain, welcome to The Download. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me, Justin.
I'm fascinated by this because a lot of what you're trying to do by bringing these writers together, and there are a lot of writers that I know personally and I love their work. If I don't know them, I love their work, is to really kind of not push back, but to change the narrative when it comes to the Chicago being the city of big shoulders. Mm-hmm. This idea that we all know the story of Chicago, because as you can tell from this anthology, the story is still to be told.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the anthology as a whole, it definitely kind of pushes back in a bunch of different ways against the mythology of Chicago as this burly, brawling, manly, macho, you know, hard-bitten
right.
city, big shoulders, well, it's the stockyards, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I was really trying to, a lot of the pieces don't directly engage with that, but they're, through their subject matter, the things that they don't engage with, who their authors are. I think I haven't actually done a breakdown, but I think the book is slightly skewed more women than men. So that's on its own right there.
But just by what you choose to have in the anthology, what the writers talk mm-hmm. about, I mean, automatically it may send a message that you're not going to be doing the hog butcher to the world,
mm-hmm.
the sort of what we all know Chicago and that what has become almost something that we lazily kind of lie on, saying, oh, Chicago is Windy Sims.
Because it's been done. It's been done to death, and we're all tired of it.
And it's not necessarily accurate.
And it's not really accurate in 2017. Hello. So how much hog butchering is going on around you, people? So, I did want to talk because of the press that I work with is Belt.
Mm-hmm.
And we are a small press and a magazine based in Cleveland, and we cover the Rust Belt. So we cover the kind of post-industrial heartland cities, Cleveland, Detroit, Flint, Pittsburgh, Youngstown, et cetera, et cetera. I wanted to kind of get at that aspect of Chicago, but from perhaps a more contemporary standpoint.
You know, there in reading on it, I mean, just reading about the Rust Belt today and reading the anthology, I mean, there is even a little bit of a conversation, if not an argument, about whether or not Chicago is part of the Rust Belt.
Well, that's the whole premise of the book.
Right.
It's like, how is Chicago part of the Rust Belt? It is geographically part of the Rust Belt, especially if you define the Rust Belt as stretching, you know, north to Milwaukee. And I mean, so you could even argue that like Duluth is part of the Rust Belt because of the economic base and the iron range, you know, up there. And economically, parts of Chicago are Rust Belty, the South Side, the West Side, the parts of Chicago that have experienced the loss of
the industrialization,
the loss of their manufacturing base, loss of jobs, depopulation. It's all these things that are very common to all of these cities. But at the same time, obviously, Chicago is much, much, much bigger than any of these cities, physically, in terms of population, in terms of a diversified economy.
It has a
harder
time.
It's of the belt, but it's also beyond the belt, and that was why I wanted to do the book.
Well, it's interesting too, that term Rust
mm-hmm.
Belt, because over time it's almost become, I don't want to say
pejorative.
Negative. Yeah,
no, pejorative. There are a lot of people. I think a lot of older people in places like Cleveland who feel it's pejorative. You know that it's, you know, because it was coined by Mondale.
The idea of a deindustrialized America, right?
Yeah, and then that it was connotations of the Dust Bowl and of this kind of, it has this sort of sad affect attached to it,
right?
And people are like, well, we're not like that. We're
right.
pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps, and we're recreating our blah, blah, blah. So. But I think there's an equally significant proportion of people who are reclaiming it as, you know, kind of with pride.
Well, I mean, that's Belt Magazine.
Yeah, that's the mission.
The concept,
Belt, yeah.
The mission. It is interesting because even we saw through the election in 2016, an idea of of who lived in the Rust Belt, mm-hmm. not to just mention what the Rust Belt is, mm-hmm. but who lived here and what they were going through. And in one end, you had this contrast or the stereotype that everybody was down and out and everybody was hopeless in despair, that kind of thing.
And everybody's an unemployed steel worker. Everybody's a white man. And all of these things are to some degree true, but they are not the totality of the Rust Belt at all. I mean, the Rust Belt is full of people of color. It is full of refugees. It is a great migration region. It is where the great migration happened to. In Cleveland, the biggest employer in Cleveland is the Cleveland Clinic, is the healthcare industry. Mm. You know, it's not like everybody's just sitting around in Cleveland waiting for the mills right. to reopen.
Well, I mean, and that's partially, I mean, the magic of the anthology is that the stories in it go beyond what we mm-hmm. know of the Rust Belt, and they mm-hmm. create a different understanding of what the Rust Belt is and what it means to Chicago. Because you could talk on one end about deindustrialization, and then you can also quickly turn on it and talk like Bill Savage talks about North Side, South
right,
Side,
right.
and our cultures and who lives here and why they live here. I mean, there's so much more to it than just one phrase that kind of covers us
and
all.
I think, you know, like there's a small subset of pieces in the book that do directly engage with the question, like, is Chicago part of the Rust Belt? Let's talk about the manufacturing economy. Let's talk about the landscape of the South, Southeast Side. But then there are a lot of pieces that don't directly engage with that at all. They're talking about life in Chicago and talking about neighborhoods, talking about all the other things that make Chicago kind of a compelling story.
Martha Baines in studio. She's the editor of Rust Belt Chicago, an anthology. She's my guest for the Big Table tonight. She's got a reading coming up with some of the authors that are going to be in that are in the book at 57th Street Books in Hyde Park on Thursday.
Wednesday, the 30th.
Wednesday the 30th. Yeah. That's coming up at 57th Street Books in Hyde Park on 57th mm-hmm. Street. Martha Bain, my guest tonight. Stay with us. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour tonight, we're playing Never Have I Ever. And I have to say, Martha, never have I ever been to Cleveland.
Really?
I don't think I've ever been to Cleveland in my life.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think maybe because 90 goes through there, that you kind of go through there regardless.
It goes south of there.
Yeah, but
I really go through Cleveland.
Yeah, I've never actually had and I had roommates that were from Cleveland. And just always got out of it. Anyway,
you should stop by.
I know.
I was there last year. I've been there. It was there last month actually. But
Martha Bain is the editor of Rust Belt Chicago, an anthology. She's a senior editor at Belt Magazine, and we're talking about the book. And she's going to be at 57th Street Books next Wednesday with some of the authors that are in the anthology mm-hmm. With a reading and a performance. I'm interested because, you know, you have been working for Belt Magazine for a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. Belt, as we talked about, the mission of rediscovering and re-categorizing, if you will, the Rust Belt. Mm-hmm. What have you learned about the Belt? You know, the idea of being in this, I mean, because I always knew you as an editor at Chicago Reader, much more about the stories of a city, not necessarily about industry or about the Midwest. Mm-hmm. What have you learned about the Rust Belt through just being a reporter on it?
Well, that's a good question. I'm definitely not like a policy geek or an expert on deindustrialization by any stretch of the imagination. I think what I've learned about the Rust Belt and what I've enjoyed about working with Belt is that it's storytelling. You know, it is the same as editing a story at the Reader or any other kind of long narrative storytelling that allows you to kind of understand the larger picture of a place through characters, through kind of deep dives into different issues. And I definitely think that, you know, when I was at the Reader, and still to this day, I definitely have kind of as a writer, I have an affinity for the underdog stories, and I always underdog subcultures. You know, I'm not terribly interested in writing about. I'm not interested in writing about the mayor, and I'm not interested in writing about Chance the Rapper.
Yeah, plenty of people.
I mean, nothing against Chance, but
plenty of people.
Plenty
got
of people
that
want
beat.
To do that.
Yeah,
so,
right.
so I'm interested in I don't want to call it human interest, because human interest journalism sounds so. Fuzzy, but I'm interested in regular people.
Being based out of Cleveland and also Chicago and getting an opportunity to tell the stories one by one and mm-hmm. have these characters. I mean, the idea of Belt Magazine is to sort of have this introspective look at what we know to be, like we said, pejorative, the Rust Belt. Has it changed in your mind? I mean, did you go into that job going, I think I have an idea what Rust Belt means, and now you, be through those stories that have been told, you know it to be something different?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely, the whole time I've been working with Belt, I've lived here. Like, I don't live in Cleveland. I don't live in Detroit or Flint. And I definitely, I went to college in Ohio. So I have been to Cleveland. I went to Cleveland a bunch when I was in college. But other than that, like, my understanding of the Rust Belt is Chicago-based. So I think that it's much more nuanced now and much more textured now that I've had the chance to work with all these writers from these different places. I've worked on a bunch of our other city anthologies that we do that are similar to this one, that are collections of stories about different cities. And really getting a chance to look at the contrasts and kind of the dualisms that are operating in all these different places. In a place like Flint, where if anybody knows anything about Flint right now, they know GM gone, water poisoned,
right?
And they don't really know anything else about it. And doing the Flint anthology that we did, like, I really came to have a great deal of affection for this downtrodden little city that has just really can't seem to get a break.
Yeah, and, I mean, I would think that
and you learn that people really it's not that people don't want to, you know, people are stuck there. There's people don't want to leave. I mean, I think that's one of the great mythologies about the Rust Belt, is that, like, the people who stay in Cleveland, in Flint, in Detroit are trapped, and they're not. People have very good reasons for wanting to stay where they live and try to make it better.
Well, of course, the anthology is all about place. I mean, in this case, it's about Chicago. Can you, by working on the other anthologies, working on one about Cleveland or Youngstown or Flint, Do you see the difference between the cities? I mean, can you feel it through the writers, like an aesthetic, like Chicago is this and Detroit is this, or are we all just human beings and that's all media?
Well, I think that through the books are definitely filtered through the individual editor's sensibilities. Each book has an editor who is based in the city that the book is about, and that's the person who collates the contributions and really kind of crafts the whole structure of the book. And so that has a lot to do with it. But as much as that editor is representative of the place that they are writing about and creating a book about, I mean, our Detroit anthology is what I think it's probably our most literary anthology. And it really speaks to, like, the creative and artistic legacy of Detroit in a way that is very beautiful. The Cleveland book is much more straightforward storytelling, I would say. I don't want to be essentialist and say that this is the essential nature of these two places, but the books are different. They're very different in tone. They might be covering similar subject matter. Again, you know, all the Rust Belt, ABCD, tick off the list. But they're doing it with different voices and tones.
Are there things in Chicago when we talk about, you know, because as you mentioned at the top of this interview, you talked about that there are things that are very Rust Belt-y in Chicago, but then there are also things that are classified that they're not, you know, and I would say, like, maybe the cosmopolitan nature, even where we're at right now, Michigan Avenue, it's going to be different kind of setup than what we know to be the Rust
Global
Belt.
City.
But yeah, the global city. But I mean, are there things that fall into the category of Rust Belt that we don't think about? And one of the things I think about in Chicago, which is probably a shared thing, but is really well known here, is segregation. Like, are those even socio and political?
Very much.
Are they very Rust Belt themed?
That's a very Rust Belt subject. For sure. And if you look, there was just this. I don't know if you saw there was an article. This is a tangent. But there's been a bunch of coverage recently of these redlining maps that have just came out that talk about that really kind of show the graphic representations of how mortgages were given and denied in different cities across the country. And if you look at all the maps of all the Rust Belt cities are in that collection, and it's pretty.
It's all the same. It's just maybe the street names
are different. It's all the same. Another one that I would say would be the shared culture of abuses of police force against African-American citizens, which is very much an ongoing, you know, issue in Chicago. It's an issue in Cleveland. It's an issue in Detroit. I mean, all of these places have had Department of Justice investigations,
interesting. And I wonder what the dichotomy is that a lot of people who go into the police force – may be of, you know, might be white, mm-hmm. and then they're policing black communities. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a similar concepts of the fact that segregation does play a big mm-hmm. role in Rust Belt cities. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't even say, I mean, I would assume everywhere.
No, it's a huge, yeah. it's a huge issue.
Yeah. As we, you know, talk more about Chicago and Rust Belt, it's what I love about it is, and I guess it's the same for Detroit and for Cleveland, the other cities you're mentioning, is that these stories are told through writers and artists, mm-hmm. and they're not necessarily just your tried and true, you know, Nelson Algren type right. stories or Studs Terkel, which are great, but the
right,
idea
well,
being,
I really wanted to get away from that.
Yeah, but that's the idea that you want to get because in the book we'll see poets, mm-hmm. We'll see Kelly Hogan, of course, mm-hmm. Musicians, mm-hmm. Others who are in this book that aren't necessarily known for their prose on the city they live.
Right.
Was that intentional to try and get a different point of view in?
Very much so. And I asked Kelly because I knew that she was a great writer, even though she doesn't, you know, identify herself as a writer. But if you've ever read anything she's written, it's just hilarious. So I asked her to do that piece specifically. And there were a couple other people that I really targeted who were not people who would necessarily respond to a literary magazine, you know, a call for submissions for yeah. an anthology of writing, who would never even see it. And I definitely wanted to get younger writers. I wanted to get writers who were, emerging is another word that I can't stand, but writers who have perhaps not, might not be technically young, but whose voices haven't been heard yeah. that much.
Well, it reads in the way that I think the ultimate goal of the anthology, and it's your goal, but once you tell us what the goal is, but I mean, the takeaway is to redefine or re-examine mm-hmm. the idea of what the city is, mm-hmm. and these writers come at it with they talk about some of the old, but they talk about some of the new, and you get a different understanding of the place that we all live and share.
Yeah, I think I very much so, and I feel like it's incomplete. I mean, a book can only be so long. There's 52 contributors in this book, and I had to turn down a lot of other really great work. Because otherwise it would have been an encyclopedia.
Yeah, right.
I feel like it's just really, you know, it's not the definitive statement on redefining Chicago, but it's a step in that direction, and hopefully there'll be more.
All right, here's what we'll do. We'll take a break, and then we'll get the news, and we'll come back. And I want to talk about deindustrialization. And I know you're not a policy person, but the idea of redefining a mm-hmm. city. And I was just thinking about this, and even in the promo today, we talked about there was a fire at the Zenith plant out west, Melrose Park, or okay. whatever it's at. But the point being that I think of that building, and I'm like, yeah, you know what? You drive by a lot of these big, hulking spaces, you know, whether they're empty lots or the buildings still stand on them, mm-hmm. and you're reminded of what they, you know, what they meant mm-hmm. to Chicago. And I want to ask you about what you think about the built place, the built space, because it mentioned at the beginning some of the categories we'll get into mm-hmm. it. Martha Bain, the editor of Rust Belt Chicago, an anthology, is my guest. She is going to be speaking along with some of the authors that are featured in the anthology at 57th Street Books on Wednesday night, 57th Street Books in Hyde Park. Martha Bain, my guest at the big table. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Thanks, Rob. Justin Kaufman in studio with me tonight. Martha Bain, she is the editor of Rust Belt Chicago, an anthology, and she's going to be with some of the authors who are featured in the anthology at 57th Street Books next Wednesday in Hyde Park for reading and performance. We're talking about the Rust Belt as we know it or used to know it mm-hmm. and what it means to us now tonight on the download. Chicago, we were just kind of having fun in the break talking about all the different places and the stories that you've talked about when we talk about deindustrialization in this town. Mm-hmm. And we were just talking about it in the promo, it's right before the break, I was talking about it too, this idea that the Zenith plant had a fire on, I think it was just a couple days ago, which is not that big of a deal because it's an empty shuttered plant. Mm-hmm. I think they've sublet it to other things. But that, and you think of some of the other factories that are in the area, that Finkel Steel is another example of, mm-hmm. of now there's nothing on that land and they're going to redevelop it. But Chicago has stark memories and places and spaces and things that help, that stand in the way of us redefining the Rust Belt. Mm-hmm. Because you go down North Avenue or you go down the West Side or South Side and you see these honking, huge, hulking buildings that are no longer used for what they were built for. And there's nothing in them. And I mean, at least with the Stockyards, we can get past Hog Butcher because they got rid of all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but so talk about that. Talk about how hard it is to shed the idea of being an industrial city or a Rust Belt city when the spaces that were there are still there and they're just reminding us.
Yeah, and all the infrastructure is still there, or the physical built environment that is still there. I mean, you look at like places like around the Fulton Industrial Corridor where they've redeveloped like all of these old buildings into
the restaurants and stuff.
Not necessarily into restaurants, but a little further west, they're like small business incubators, light manufacturing. They're like they're supposed to be their economic development engines, basically. But you go further west, and like we were talking about, you go out to Cicero, out where the Brock's factory used to be, and which was this huge, 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 beautiful, if you're into that kind of thing, industrial building that's now just an empty empty lot. I mean, a very large empty lot. It's the absence of an entity there, but the memories are still baked into the land, I think.
And like, I wonder what that means to the psyche of a city or the people who live around it or used to be a part of it, that it still stands there and almost haunts people from afar.
It's haunted. I think it is haunted. And it haunts people with, you know, the collective memory of a neighborhood is haunted by these spaces or by their absence and by their neglect. With the Brock's, I've done a little bit of work on the West Side in the last year, and I've talked to people whose family members used to work at the Brock's plant, which was closed in the late 2000s, and then they blew it up in 2011 Batman movie, and now it's just demolished, and it's just I don't know what's happening with the land. But you know, it used to be like it wasn't just an economic engine; people really talked about it as this like benevolent employer, as this sort of glue that really held the West Side together. Along with like Helene Curtis and all the other plant factories and manufacturing things all up and down Cicero and in that kind of area right around like West Garfield Park in Austin. And then you're just left with nothing. All you're left with is like nostalgia and no new jobs.
I mean, that probably plays into what Mondale was thinking about when he coined it, the Rust Belt.
I was just going to say, and then the flip side is what's like something like what's happening with the Finkelsteel site, which is obviously much, much, much more valuable real estate in the taxonomy of city real estate than the far west side. This is a hot, you know, right Lincoln Park industrial zone.
Let's talk about that.
Is going to get, you know, after many, many, many months or years of negotiations, has finally been sold. It's been sold for, what, $50 million?
I don't know what the number is, but it's
more. That doesn't even seem like that
there's
much.
Probably a lot.
And it's going to get redeveloped as, you know, some sort of mixed-use, residential, commercial, massive.
Well, Finkel's a great example for the conversation we're having, because Finkelsteel, even when it was operational,
it was crazy.
You'd roll through Cortland there,
roll
or whatever
down Cortland,
that was,
and you see the fires.
Right,
the,
you see the fire. Yeah, and you're like, what a juxtaposition to the
There's
neighborhood
a piece about
around.
That in the book.
Yeah, so, but the idea that there was this happening right next to a neighborhood, or right next to the what was happening just at North and Clybourne, or you had the new Trader Joe's while there was
the steel plant right there,
and now the steel plant is gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be redeveloped with the city council, and there's been stories about redeveloping of the North Chicago River corridor there. Let's talk about that. Talk about, is that a good thing? I mean, for everything we just said, the fact that Brock's is a reminder, it haunts people, or the Zenith plant, the idea that Finkelsteel is going to become a shining building on the river and mixed use and condo development, and it will erase that reminder of the Rust Belt, is that a good thing? Right?
No, I don't. If I thought that it could be redeveloped into something that was really distinctive and really special, then that might be one thing, but my confidence in that happening is pretty low. But the rising tide doesn't just lift all boats. The rising tide flattens everything out into one giant big box store.
Right.
And you see that in the strip mollification of other areas around the city and around the country.
Development doesn't automatically mean renewal.
No, it doesn't. It means homogeneity. Money means homogeneity. And so I, of course, I missed the aesthetic experience, the of having the Finkelsteel plant right there. It was really cool. It was a cool thing. Also, yes, it smelled. All that corridor used to smell terrible with the tannery and the steel plant going and the recycling.
Cars getting smashed. There, yeah.
And so, you know, it's there's trade-offs. There's trade-offs.
Well, I think about,
I don't want to wax nostalgic about like the lost beauty of the industrial city.
Right.
Because
you don't have to.
Yeah.
And I just think there's a interesting contrast there, and it's played out a lot in the book, and we're talking about it here on WGN Radio. This concept of changing the identity of a city. And I think let's talk about the 606 as an that was an industrial corridor, an old train track that was I was not around to see it in use, but I always knew it to be an abandoned train track. Like it lived
A friend who lived on Monticello who used to swear she could see a train going by there every once in a while.
Oh, wow.
And somebody told me, this is a total tangent, sorry. Someone told me that they had to do that to retain the air rights.
Interesting.
To the space.
Yeah.
But I don't have no idea if that's true or not. But anyway, but 606 is a really great example because I live right on the 606.
But so automatically, I ask you as a resident that's connected there, when you look up at the 606 now, you don't necessarily think industry. You think that's the new gentrification.
And I love this, and I actually am very fond of the 606. I used to go up there before it was legal to go up there, and I go up. I live literally 20 feet from one of the on ramps right now, and you know, I'm of course I love having a bike path right by my house. It's great.
Yeah.
But it's also the effect it's having on the neighborhood is indisputable.
Yeah.
It is clear as day, as clear as every for sale sign along that's facing the trail. Because people just want to cash in and get
human
out.
Beings.
Yeah, human beings. Damn them and their needs for money.
Well, I love this convo because it's the same. Pete and I. We went and did kayaked on the Chicago River.
Right.
We went around Goose Island.
Right.
Good or for better or for worse. But we went along, and when you get to a certain point, and you're on one side, which you're on Kingsbury, and you see the re-beautification. There's birds and there's some trees, and you feel, oh wow, this is a hidden gem. And then you take the turn to go back, and you go up the other side, which is just straight up industry.
Mm-hmm.
There's still factories that's maybe or maybe not in use. Yeah. But the idea is that you are reminded. There is a stark reminder that this is an industrial city in a stretch of kayaking between, I don't know, Chicago Avenue and North. And my question is just that when I'm doing that, I'm not necessarily thinking nostalgic. I'm not like, wow, this was once a big industry town. I'm like, it still is.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning this is the people.
We have industrial zones in the city.
It's
specifically designed to keep manufacturing jobs in the city of Chicago. But what's going to happen to them down the road is definitely a question on everybody's mind.
But that's my point. Saying what is at the end of the day that. The city, which in all of its complexities and all of its social and political issues, which are here, is a lot of things to a lot of different people. And to suggest that it's in a good way, that it's part of the Rust Belt, it works because you can almost cherry pick out Rust Belt concepts. When you're between Chicago and North Avenue, you're like, this is as industrial as Cleveland.
And also there's condos in Cleveland.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's not like the Cleveland, Pittsburgh. I mean, Pittsburgh's an amazing. I mean, Pittsburgh is a city that's really reinvented itself while kind of capitalizing on its Rust Belt history. I mean, it's gleaming new biotech and
it's reinventing itself.
Yeah, but also a lot of it's still using the same architecture. So the question is, like, what's better, like loft condos in an old industrial building or loft condos in a brand new shiny building.
I love this kind of well, it's just interesting about as you look at what Rust Belt means.
Mm-hmm.
And in the anthology, and I thought this was interesting too, is that you have it sort of broken out. You have all these writers, these great writers in here. But you'll have an area that's city of movement.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the built city. Then the divided city.
Mm-hmm.
You got the conflicted city. The living city. City of migrants.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that says it all. That there are different ways to look at Chicago through many different lenses. That yes, it can be a Rust Belt city, but it almost It's how you view it mm-hmm. in the way that there are several different stories about what kind of city mm-hmm. Chicago is, all within one.
Yeah, and all these different the different categories all sort of speak to different themes that I think Chicago shares with the rest of the region. The living city is the natural ecosystem of the Great Lakes, which Chicago shares with every other city on the Great Lakes. City of movement and city of migrants, which are bookend the book, are both about kind of the flow of population
yeah.
through the city, whether it's from overseas. Or Mexico or from Mississippi
yeah, right.
or from Michigan
right
because that's what Chicago is. Chicago is the to be corny, it's the buckle of the belt. It's where people come from: Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan, Indiana, downstate Illinois. It's where people come looking for opportunity. And some of the other stuff in here. The built city really does speak to the physical landscape, the post-industrial. Landscape of the city yeah. that it shares with.
My last question, just yeah. as we a political one, and it was brought up in the election, just about the and you kind of already we kind of went over this, but the idea that the Rust Belt was forgotten, and
right.
it was a big part of how Donald Trump was elected because people were not paying attention.
People on the coasts.
Yeah, we're not yeah. paying attention to the plights of Midwesterners.
Mm-hmm.
In your reporting and the writers that you've collected, but also your work at Belt Magazine, I mean, is that an accurate description, an accurate type?
Yes and no. I think that there's definitely a flyover journalism problem in the Midwest, where people, the coastal reporters come in,
sure.
parachute in. Do a story, leave.
Chicago violence, yeah.
Chicago right, violence right. here, 36 hours in Chicago. And that's way predates the election. But I also think that coastal reporters, coastal media, were covering the Rust Belt, just no one cared. So it's not about the media not mm-hmm. paying attention to the Rust Belt. It's about...
The country?
The country, yeah. I mean, whether it was consulting on political campaigns not paying attention or just your average voter who just wrote off the issues in the middle of the country as irrelevant to the larger game plan.
When you see the president say he wants to bring jobs, classic manufacturing jobs, or whether it be Foxconn or what happened, Carrier in mm-hmm. Indiana, all sort of Rust Belt areas,
mm-hmm.
Is that what the Rust Belt want? I mean, is that what they're looking for? This idea of almost a throwback to bringing back that kind of culture?
I mean, people want jobs. I can't speak authoritatively to what the people working
sure.
at Carrier want or what people working in specific regions want. I think that the idea that we're going to return to some days of manufacturing glory is a cherished dream held by a very small subset of people. I think that what most people in the Midwest, and if I can just generalize
from
the heck of it, people want opportunity. They want to be taken seriously. They want their concerns to be taken seriously. They want all the things that normal people want. They want a good place to live. They want decent water. They want health care. They want people not, they want possibilities.
Right.
And whatever shape those possibilities take is anybody's guess.
My last question here, just keep saying my last question. One more last question.
I can talk about that.
The one part and from editing the writers and also working, in different cities and also with Belt,
uh-huh.
does the people in this town, whether it be from the top politicians to the people who are walking or working, do we consider ourselves a Rust Belt city?
I think most people don't. I would have to say,
is that some sort of like?
Because I think they think it's better. We're bigger than that. I think it's a little bit of second cityism in its own weird way. If we're going to put ourselves in a category, people want Chicago to be in the same category as New York or L.A., not the same category as Cleveland.
Right, and I wonder
I think a mistake in some ways, because a lot of these smaller cities have a lot going for them, In terms of, I mean, for one thing, a lot of them are just like you said, like reinventing themselves, and they're coming up with really creative solutions, in a way that feels somewhat stifled in a larger landscape.
Always great to see you.
Great to see you.
Martha Bain, she's the editor of Rust Belt Chicago, an anthology which is out now. I mean, how many writers are in here?
52 poets, essayists, journalists, and a couple pieces of short fiction.
It's great. It is Rust Belt Chicago, an anthology, and there will be an event next Wednesday at 57th Street Books in Hyde Park where Martha will be there with some of the writers from the anthology. Martha, great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Justin.